It is time now for another edition of On Your Money with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Hello, I'm Joy Cardine, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kevin is here with information and advice on your money, including why you might want to unload that old refrigerator soon. We'll also shop around for mosquito repellents and treatments and discuss if it makes sense to buy a hybrid or electric vehicle. Plus, Kevin is ready for your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. His website is onyourmoney.com, and we have posted a link to that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Kevin joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
So, Kevin, do you have an old refrigerator lying around?
I'm actually buying them up just to take advantage of this program.
Well, you talk a little bit about that. You say it might be worth more giving up your old refrigerator now. What do you mean?
Well, there are two ways that you could get paid for it by Focus on Energy, which is a statewide utility and renewable energy group. They're having a contest right now trying to find the oldest refrigerator in Wisconsin. And no, your little adobe hut with the, you know, snow in it doesn't quite count. But if you have an actual refrigerator, you turn it in and it ends up being the oldest one, you could win $1,000. The contest runs through August 31st. But even if you don't have one of those ice boxes with the wooden door on it, you can still get some cash as well.
How so?
Well, if you just get rid of your old one, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about 20% of Wisconsin households have a second refrigerator. And if you turn in one that is running, not only do you get it picked up for you, but you get a $50 check for it. Now, the requirements are that the refrigerator is actually working and that there is, quote, a clear path to the refrigerator from the front door, so that the people getting it out don't have to, you know, move your pool table and the boxes that you've been intending to unpack since you moved into the house in 1973. And you can find out more details about this program at focusonenergy.com, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
So, Kevin, why is so much attention being paid to old refrigerators these days?
They're big energy hogs. The older ones can use up about 2 to 3 times as much energy if it was built before 1993 as the newer ones. And a new one probably costs about $10 to $12 per month to run. So if you do have one that's more than 20 years old, you could be wasting about $150 to $300 per year in energy. Plus, there's also the problem of trying to dispose of them. At least this way, the group knows that the refrigerators are going to be disposed of, recyclable parts are going to be taken out, et cetera, and it's not going to end up in a landfill or the side of the road.
Well, what about those of us who have only one old refrigerator?
You still might want to consider the program, and especially if you get a new one, let's say you pay $400 for it. You'll get the payback and the energy savings in a little over a year, plus you get the $50 credit as well. And if you are going to get a second one or replace a second one, you can put it in the basement. If you put it in the basement rather than the garage, which a lot of people do, the heat and cooling is more constant, and therefore the refrigerator doesn't have to work as hard and have to get as use up as much energy. And also, everybody going up and down the stairs to get a beer or a Coke, they'll use up a little bit more calories that way. Only use it for storage, and definitely pack it very full, because actually the more full that it is, the more efficiently it can cool.
Yeah, and I was kidding. I don't think my refrigerator's that old, but I bet you it's pushing 15 years. You say if it's pushing that old, I should probably think about replacing it?
Yeah, you might want to, and you might want to have one that actually, you know, matches the oven and range and microwave as well.
Right. So let's have a friendly wager on how old the oldest refrigerator in Wisconsin is going to be. What do you think?
I'm going to say probably there's got to be some in somebody's shed up in the hinterlands that's probably from the 1930s, I would guess.
Oh, yeah, not bad. I guess I wasn't going to go quite that old, but I'll say that it's going to be from the 1920s, just to up you one. How's that?
Okay, all loser right. does the other's taxes.
All right. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it's time now for the On Your Money email bag. Gary in Sun Prairie says, my brother has lived a sordid past, which resulted in his declaring bankruptcy, which destroyed his credit history. What is the best way for someone in this situation to reestablish credit so he may secure a small business loan? Thankfully, he has left his past behind him and has a very bright future. But it would be even brighter if he could secure a small business loan. So what do you say, Kevin?
Oh, it's like speech from a tent show revival of the sordid past, and now has redemption and the future is bright. There was no false praise in that letter?
No, not at all.
Interesting. I must have took it because Gary and Sun Prairie rhyme. So we'll take any first name and location that rhymes in lieu of false praise. Gary and Sun Prairie, you and your brothers should know that bankruptcy is not a death sentence. There were 1.2 million of them in 2012, and that's typically the number. There's usually over a million bankruptcies declared in the United States every single year. It's not a good situation, but it is necessary because it allows people who borrow money get in over their head. And for whatever reason, either it's their own poor luck or dumb mistakes or whatever, it gives them a chance to start over again. And if there weren't bankruptcy, people would not take as many chances in their life. They wouldn't borrow money to buy houses and start businesses and buy cars and all these other things. And the economy would be much worse off if it weren't for bankruptcy. So it should be avoided, but it's not the end of the world. It usually lasts on a credit report for about 10 years. However, many people who do declare bankruptcy report that the minute they get it all cleared up and straightened away, they start getting new credit card offers in the mail for it. Now, those aren't good credit card offers, but they are credit card offers. And typically, if you pay your bills and live the good life on the path to redemption on which Gary and Sun Prairie's brother appears to be on, you'll find that the effect of the bankruptcy will probably start dissipating after about 2 years after declaration.
All right. So how should his brother start establishing credit history?
Well, it really goes in stages. The first and most important thing is to pay his bills on time and make sure that he doesn't get late payments from cell phone providers or utilities or rent or mortgage or whatever. He should build up his savings and checking account. And after he's done that, he may be able to get a secured credit card. This is where you put, say, $500 into an account, and then you can use a piece of plastic to draw that $500. And the credit card provider knows that they're going to get their money back because they have it sitting right in the account. But it does demonstrate responsibility. Use of the plastic. And then after probably a year or so, he can qualify for a regular credit card again. The terms won't be fantastic, but it will be better than nothing. And as long as he charges things and then pays them off right away, that will quickly build his credit back up. And if Gary in Sun Prairie really wants to help his brother, he can consider putting his brother on a credit card account that Gary controls. And his brother being on the account, he won't have access to the credit, but Gary's hopefully responsible use of the card may help build up his brother's credit rating.
That would be nice. So what are Gary's brother's chances, though, of getting a small business loan in the future?
Probably not good, at least for the first few years. Small business loans actually are very difficult to come by, even if you have a great credit rating, even if you have some security behind it. It's just very difficult to do it because usually most of the lending institutions have to take the loan on their own books, and so that's how they have to get paid. and they have to make sure that the loan gets paid back. So small business loans are very difficult to get. He may be better off actually getting low interest rate credit cards at some point in the future and using those, again, assuming he can pay them off responsibly. He might want to look at borrowing money from friends and family, or there are some crowdsourcing operations that we'll be talking about in a few weeks that do allow people to bypass traditional lenders and go to the internet, if you will, and borrow from that. But there are some pitfalls for both borrowers and lenders under those programs, and that's why you should make sure to tune in over the next few weeks.
We will. And if you have a question right now for Kevin, we have a rare open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about saving or spending, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up on this edition of On Your Money, we'll talk about when it makes sense to buy a hybrid or electric vehicle, and Kevin will also have some advice on avoiding mosquito bites. That's right. And answers to your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Here's an email from Maureen. I was listening to On Your Money recently when you provided some guidelines to follow when considering the purchase of long-term care insurance. I was driving, though, and couldn't write them down. Would you run through them again, please?
Maureen, if you really care about this, you will drive 75 miles an hour down the freeway with a pen and paper in hand, you know, holding it with your knees and jot down this information. Come on, let's make this a priority here. Glad you asked, Maureen. We will be covering this subject in more depth in the next few weeks. But yes, generally, long-term care insurance is a very rapidly evolving coverage area, and it's not evolving in a good way for the consumer. The long-term care insurance companies are either getting out of the business or not getting into it. And that means that it's likely that even when you do buy a policy today, that you will probably not be able to count on it being there for 25 or 30 years. So you should definitely get one in which you pay by the month of the premiums. It typically costs about $150 to $200 for a single person and about $200 to $300 for a married couple who gets a policy, because there are some discounts for married couples who purchase policies on each other. Generally, it costs about 1 day's coverage per month in premiums, meaning that if you get a policy that covers you for $200 a day in a facility for 3 years, you typically are going to pay about $200 a month for that. And then if you have less than $200,000 in liquid assets right now, you probably shouldn't look at it. If you have more than $2 million, you probably shouldn't look at it. And if less than that amount, it's the $200,000, it's because you probably can't afford the premiums in your budget, and especially if you are retired. If you have more than that amount of money, you probably should self-fund. But again, we will be covering that in detail over the next few weeks.
I look forward to that. Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, is with us just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. Kevin telling us all sorts of financial information, and you can ask him a question at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Certified Financial Planner Kevin McKinley. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you have a personal finance question for Kevin. You can also email us, onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our first caller is Ann in Rice Lake. Hi, Ann, you're on the air. Ann, are you there? Well, I guess not. So Ann just dropped off. Mary in Milwaukee, though. I bet you Mary's there. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hi, Mary.
Enjoy.
Morning.
I just have a quick question. I'm trying to help my daughter clean up some credit, and she got a copy of her credit report. She's now secured a secured credit card, but there's two things that are on her credit report, and it's from cell phone use. phone bills, and the company is no longer in existence. Should she be paying these off? Should she try to make restitution? Or I guess we're not sure.
Sure. So what you're saying is you ran a copy of her credit report and she found that there were outstanding balances owed to cell phone companies, but the cell phone companies are out of business, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Do you know if they just went out of business, period, or were perhaps they were swallowed up by another company?
Well, they were Sprint, so I'm not honestly sure. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for being honest with us. I appreciate
okay.
that. Yeah, she needs to pay those off because not only, even if, let's just say it was to XYZ cell phone company that went out of business and you can't find where they are, there's a very good chance that as part of the liquidation of the company, the accounts receivable were probably sold. And they're sold to people who will eventually find her and hunt her down and try to collect that money. So she should move heaven and earth to try to pay those accounts off because okay. even after she does it, to be perfectly frank, they probably are going to haunt her for a little while as well. So she would want okay. to pay those off as sooner rather than later. I mean, she does owe the money, so she wants to do the right thing and pay those off. And even when she gets those paid off, she needs to make sure that whoever is taking her money for those, Mary, reports it to the proper credit bureau of where she's seeing this account outstanding, and then she needs to go back in and keep checking it to make sure it's resolved, because otherwise, when she's actually applying for credit or when, let's say, an employer is looking at it or her car insurance company might look at it as well, it takes a long time to rectify the situation anyway, but especially it's very difficult when she's under the gun like that and there's some kind of other party who needs that information in the correct form. So not only pay them off sooner rather than later, but then make sure that it gets resolved on the credit report as quickly as possible.
Excellent advice. I thank you. I'll pass it along to her. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Sounds good.
Larry in Middleton is with us now. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, good morning. I would appreciate it if Kevin would comment on some of the major differences between a money market account and a money market deposit account. And I'm particularly interested in return of the investment rather than return on the investment.
Larry is a man after my own paranoid heart because a lot of people have, there's about $3 trillion in money market accounts right now. And we not only do not know where that money is invested, by definition, it's just in a liquid account, and the providers typically only report the investments. They provide a snapshot typically once per quarter. But because this very low interest rate environment in which we live has forced these money market providers to invest money in things that are either riskier than we might want them to, or it's actually losing money. It's costing many money market providers, it costs them about 0.5% or so every single year to run their business. Well, they might be able to only make a quarter to 0.5% on safe liquid money. And thankfully, the regulators have recognized this problem, and they're trying to get money market funds, for better or for worse, changed into things that float up and down like mutual funds. And that means that you may have your money in something that you think is very safe and you can't lose on, but you might open up your statement at the end of the quarter and find that it went down in value. Probably not a lot. But it can happen, and it's more likely that it will happen. So the deposit ones that have the FDIC insurance or the NCUA insurance that credit unions provide are going to be safer and more stable than the other ones that aren't insured and are typically offered by a mutual fund company. So yes, I would definitely prefer that you stick with the insured options, and don't worry, you know, a lot of people say, well, this one only pays 0.00001%, so I'm going to move it into one that's a little more risky, but it pays 0.00002%. And I would just as soon have you have the money in something that's very safe, give up a little bit of yield, but get more back in terms of liquidity and knowledge of where your money is at.
Does either of these types of investments have a maturity date?
Generally, no. Generally, it's an ongoing process. As long as the money's there, you can keep it there. If you want to keep it a little safer and you can't get access to an insured money market fund, you might just want to roll the money into short-term treasuries or short-term certificates of deposit. Again, it's a little less liquid, but you're likely to get a little more yield, and then you would have that maturity date.
All right, Larry, good luck to you. What was that interest rate again, Kevin? Just kidding. Carol in Lodi is next. Hello, Carol.
Hi. I have a question regarding my 20-year-old son. So far, he has not borrowed any money from an institution, nor does he have any credit cards, but he is wanting to establish credit. And so I was wondering what would be, because he asks my advice quite a bit, and I've always discouraged credit cards. It's like, oh, you don't want to get into credit cards. You don't want that hassle. You don't want to, you know, I guess it comes from when I was young and I misused credit cards. At this point, he's interested in buying a car, and he would like me to co-sign. And I'm wondering, is that a good way for him to start establishing credit?
Absolutely. Has he tried to get the loan on his own?
Yes, and he's a waiter, and his wages are low, but his tips are high. But they don't work with that. They say, no, it has to be based on wages. So, no,
yep,
he cannot.
That's a little trickier with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. How comfortable are you, Carol, co-signing for him?
I'm comfortable.
Okay.
I guess I look at it two ways. I look at it, one, I think he should strike out on his own and be mature and take care of these things on his own. And the other is, well, I'm comfortable. I trust that he'll pay it. He's borrowed money from me before and paid me back, and I just know that he'll pay it. But I'm wondering, the only question I have about it is a life lesson. Does a kid have to do it on his own? Or is this a part where it would be good for me to step in and say, okay, let's get you starting, you know, to establish credit this way?
That's a great question, and I love the way that you're looking at that, Carol, is because I agree with you. This is way more about parenting than it is about personal finance. So I agree with that take on it. I would do it based on what you've said. I would co-sign on it because the kid needs a car. And who knows how long, he might be a waiter for 20 years. And if he is, it's going to be much more difficult for him to ever get credit. And if he should lose his job or suffer some kind of injury or setback, it's going to be even more difficult in the future in years. And if you're comfortable knowing that you may be either on the hook for that loan, if he can't, then I'm okay with you going ahead and co-signing it. Now, that said, make sure that the more worried you are about him defaulting on the loan, make sure he buys a car that you want, not something that he wants, because you might end up driving it.
That's a good point. Are there other ways in which he should start to establish credit as well for his future?
I would go back to his credit union or bank and explain the situation. Say, I'd like a small credit card. It's something with a $500 balance on it. And if you're concerned about his use of it, just being young and making mistakes like everybody does, hopefully in their salad days, the thing I would prefer you do is have the statements come to you or have third-party access to the statement so you can monitor it and that you can pay the bill on time if he seems like he might forget it.
Good luck to you, Carol, and your son. Stacy in Oregon is with us. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Joy. This is Stacy. Good to talk to you guys today.
Well, thank you for calling. What is
Hi,
your
Stacey.
Question?
Hi, I just have a quick question about 401k. This year, I do the full match with my company, but we also have a bonus that we get. And so I switched that most of the bonus would go into my 401k. And I'm just curious about what, if there are any penalties for exceeding the maximum on your 401k per year.
Generally not, and it's usually because you get the opportunity to back the contribution back out. This happens quite a bit, and especially when people are changing jobs. They were maxing out their contributions at the old place, and they start doing it at the new place, and all of a sudden they realize that they've exceeded the dollar amounts going in for the particular year. So do you think you may have done it, or are you just worried about doing it?
I'm just worried about doing it. I don't think I did it this year.
Okay. Check with the HR department. Does your employer have an HR department?
Yes.
Okay, check with the HR department and see what the procedures are for doing that if you do think you are getting up above it. Just a reminder, if you're under age 50, The elective deferral limit is $17,500 for 2013. If you happen to be over that age, the elective deferral limit is $23,000. And both of those numbers are either that figure or your salary in bonus, whichever is less. So just make sure you don't go over those numbers. And if you do, check back with the provider and they'll say, okay, here's how we'll back this back out and undo these contributions.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stacy. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and with us just about every week at this time for information and advice on your money. If you have a question regarding personal finances for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Oh, how irritating is that? If you plan on enjoying the remaining days of summer,
geez, yeah.
Kevin, swat it. It's really bugging us. If you plan on enjoying the remaining days of summer, you need to know a few things about dealing with mosquitoes. Kevin, I am so lucky. Because I go to bed so early, I'm not out and about in the evening, and I don't have to worry about these guys as much. But they're really out in full force, aren't they?
Yes, these vampiric varmints have been especially bad this year, but there is hope on the way. The rain has been our enemy and our friend. Remember that gorgeous snowfall we had in part of the state, which was May 8th?
Right.
Which I don't understand why we live here when it can be 95 degrees 6 weeks after it snows 10 inches. This doesn't make any sense, but that late spring and all that snow meant more water and more bugs, but then more rain and cooler temperatures later on washed away a lot of the egg-laying environments for bugs. So we're going to talk today about what works, what doesn't work, and we're also going to help save lives later on.
Well, what are the first steps in avoiding mosquito bites?
Be born to the right person. WebMD says that about 85% of mosquito attractiveness is determined by your genetic makeup.
Really?
So if you have parents who are getting bit up, birth parents, you're probably going to get bit up as well. The environment is important too, and if you can keep from emitting a lot of carbon dioxide, that will help as well. Eliminate a lot of the standing water around your environment is a good idea. Ponds, bird baths, upside down pickup trucks or whatever is holding a lot of water. And then finally, one thing that's recommended is you know, wear long pants, tuck the cuff into your boots, put gloves on and a bug hat with the screen, the veil on it. And the nice thing about that is it doesn't make you less attractive to bugs and ticks. It just makes you less attractive overall. So nobody wants to be around you.
Did you swallow a bug, Kevin? Are you okay?
I think I might have a gnat in the studio here.
So what kind of repellents should we use?
Well, Consumer Reports tests these out every single year, and they found out that the Off and the Cutter, both the Deep Woods and the regular woods versions, were the best. And there are some other homemade remedies as well. Oil of lemon eucalyptus is actually promoted by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, as an effective repellent for bugs. So if you want to go au naturel, that is a good way to do it naturally.
What about those bug zappers? Do they work?
The bug zappers are probably more flash than substance, and some of them may even attract bugs without actually killing them. A better option are these mosquito traps, and especially ones that have a fan that draw them in. Consumer Reports has a video up at consumerreports.org. Remember the old commercial of Off where a guy sticks his arm into the aquarium?
Yes.
Full of mosquitoes,
yeah,
flying around?
Well,
they did the same thing with that.
Yeah.
It does. It sounds like my version of an awful situation. A better idea that they found is actually those clip-ons that have a battery fan in it. And what it does is the fan blows an odor around that will drive away the insects as well. And those cost about $8 or $9. DEET is still the best chemical to use. Even the Environmental Working Group likes it as long as it's used in proper amounts and not on infants under 2 months old. But there was a couple different stories out where they said for an outdoor environment, the best thing that you can use to keep mosquitoes away is a nice big outdoor fan. you know, like a big box fan that you can get for 15 or 20 bucks. And if you have those blowing, mosquitoes can only stand a breeze of about a mile to a mile and a half per hour. And so with a strong breeze from the fan, that will help disrupt their flying pattern and will do a good job of keeping them away from your deck or patio or whatever.
I never thought of that. Good idea. As I mentioned, I've been avoiding them for some reason this year. But when they do bite me, I have a bite about the size of a nickel or a quarter. What are some ways to deal with the bites themselves?
That's also some of a genetic epidemiological makeup, but calamine lotion, hydrocortisone, and Claritin can all help do it. You can ice it as well, and because I have three children who apparently have a hobby of not only getting bit but also scratching them to death, we started taking Scotch tape and putting it over the bite, and that not only kind of helps keeping it from exposed to the air, and so they don't have a tendency to itch it as much. But I've read some places that the actual glue on the tape helps pull the chemical out of the bite that makes it itchy. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's really worked for us as well. Other home remedies include: put apple cider vinegar on it, rub a banana peel on it, and put a lavender oil is another one on it as well. Nice thing about that is not only do you help reduce the itching of mosquito bites, but then you have all the ingredients you need to make a lovely salad.
There we go. Well, I never heard of some of those. All right. So how is this information on mosquitoes going to save any lives?
Well, of course, you've all heard about the West Nile virus, and there's typically, it's a very serious ailment, especially for people who are the few people who do get bit and suffer from it. But a bigger threat, according to a study from Rutgers University, is childhood obesity. And they've conducted a very small study where they looked at areas that had been sprayed for mosquito control programs and areas, and compared those areas to ones that hadn't had that application put on it. And then they charted how often kids reported playing outside. And they said the ones where the mosquito control had been applied played outside for 229 minutes per day, whereas the ones who didn't played outside for 99 minutes a day. So they're concerned that mosquitoes are causing childhood obesity because the kids aren't getting much activity. And I say you should actually get the kids outside and get them into a pest-filled environment, not just mosquitoes and gnats, but hornets, anything that they need to run a lot to get away from.
Yeah.
That will give them the exercise they need and still get them outside.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Kevin, but do they still have... They used to, when I was growing up, have these foggers, these trucks that would drive down the street and and spew pesticides to kill the mosquitoes. They don't
and
do that anymore.
You would run after the trucks and play in the cloud it was emitting for fun. Right.
Actually, my brothers did that. I think I had sense enough not to do that. But my goodness, they don't do those anymore, do they?
Not that I know of. There is part of a general broad pest control. I think it's usually done with helicopters these days.
Yeah. Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, mosquito expert. He's also here to answer your personal finance questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. By the way, next week, it will be an all questions answered edition of On Your Money. So you can email questions anytime, onyourmoney@wpr.org, and the full hour next week will be all questions answered. Well, let's see. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. And this is the last segment of our car conversation series. And today we will discuss if it is smart to buy a car that uses less or even no gasoline. So, Kevin, is it a good idea?
Yeah, listeners, I've been asking, are we there yet? At the finish of this series, and yes, we are finally there today. Absolutely, it can be a good idea to buy the car if you go in with your eyes open and you're doing it for the right reasons. The consulting group ALG says that in 2012, about 3% of new vehicles sold were hybrid or electric, and that's certainly understandable. With the cost of gas at $4 a gallon, if you drive 15,000 miles per year and you're only getting 20 miles per gallon, which is about the average fuel efficiency that drivers get, you're spending about $3,000 per year. And even the Department of Energy says that several different electric and hybrid-based vehicles can get anywhere from 50 to 100 miles per gallon of the equivalent over gas-powered vehicles. And plus, you're burning less gas, so it can be, in some cases, more environmentally friendly.
So what do you advise for would-be buyers to think about?
Well, you may end up paying more just to save money on gas. You usually pay a premium for the technology, and not only at the purchase, but you may pay more in the future depending on the vehicle. And again, that's still okay. If you go from 20 miles per gallon even to just 30 miles per gallon in that previous example, you'll save about $1,000 per year. And the longer you keep that vehicle, the more likely it is you'll save a lot more money than what any premium would cost to purchase a vehicle that burns less gas. And obviously, if prices of gas rise, that's an even better idea, and it's less advantageous if they fall. But it's still not the only factor to consider when trying to decide on a vehicle that burns less gas.
So do you have a favorite fuel source to look at?
Yeah, there are pluses and minuses with every fuel source. Even with straight gas models, a lot of people say, well, I want to get a hybrid or an electric vehicle. There are several vehicles that are just smaller and more efficient, and you can still get great gas mileage and up to 40 or 50 miles per gallon. A hybrid is one of the most popular options for it. There's a really neat calculator at fueleconomy.gov that you can compare the savings on a hybrid. So let's say you have to pay a little more for the version of a vehicle you like that is a hybrid. Fueleconomy.gov says, well, based on these prices and the amount of miles you drive, here's how much you might save, and we'll have that link up at onyourmoney.com. Diesel, many of us remember a lot of the German vehicles that use diesel 30 or 40 years ago, how much they rumbled, how loud they were, and how much smoke they put out. That's a thing of the past, and generally they're much more efficient, and they burn fuel as well. Now, you will pay more for the fuel as well, and typically you'll have to stick with a German-made or European-made vehicle if you do want to go with a diesel. I think the most interesting area for the future for vehicle propulsion method is electric.
Why do you say that? Why electric?
Well, there are about four dozen new models, according to Edmunds.com, that are coming out in the next year or two of electric-based vehicles. And for the right driver, the price can be a really great deal. Many times when people look at electric vehicles alone and see the sticker price, it's very high. But there are a lot of different incentives on it right now. Huge tax credits for some vehicles. Plus, many dealers have to sell a certain number of these vehicles as part of their mix, according to government standards. And so they're discounting them heavily and giving really great deals on leases if you're interested in this type of vehicle. And it's not just the fuel that you're saving. You may be getting a really great vehicle. Consumer Reports does a study every single year where they ask all of their readers, which vehicle did you purchase in the last year and what's your satisfaction of it? And the number one highest rated, with 92% of buyers saying they would purchase the same vehicle again, was the Chevy Volt. The Nissan Leaf is another big seller that also gets a high level of satisfaction. And then, of course, the Tesla vehicle, which is getting a lot more attention from not only a company standpoint, but from a distribution model. And they've really played up the notion that this is a fun car to drive. Those can be very expensive, anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000 or so. Keep in mind, if you are going to be buying an electric vehicle, you're going to be paying a lot of money for the battery. The lives of these batteries is really unknown because the technology and the vehicles are so new, and they're very expensive to replace. You also have to charge up the vehicle, and your home plugging it into the wall outlet may not be enough. There are not a lot of public chargers out there right now yet. That's changing. There will be more, but you may have to purchase a charger as well and then use and pay for the electricity to charge it up. And then finally, the range. Most of these vehicles, you're probably looking at a range anywhere from between 50 to 200 miles or so before it needs another charge. So these are best used as vehicles, a second vehicle or even a third vehicle, or one where you don't have to use it that much, just for very short trips in town.
Sounds good. Something to consider. If you have a question that you'd like Kevin to consider, 1-800-642-1234 is our number. You can also email us onyourmoney@wpr.org. John in Liberty, Illinois is with us now. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, could you speak a little louder, John? We're having a hard time hearing you.
Yes, sorry.
Join our old.
Yes.
with Fidelity Investments, my wife and I, about 65, accumulated about $1.5 million of retirement funds. Was concerned about how I was managing the selection of stocks and stuff. And the Fidelity people said, well, we vetted a bunch of companies that can manage the money for you, being very trusting of Fidelity and their vetting process. I elected to go with one of these wealth management companies. They charge about 1.5% for equity management and about 0.5% for money management, cash management. So I'm wondering about whether this is cost effective or whether I've made a good decision in this regard.
Well, I think Fidelity is a fine organization. I think they're up in the same level with the Schwabs and Vanguards and TD Ameritrade out there. But they do have, you know, an incentive when they vet these money management firms. And as much due diligence as they might do, I'm sure they can check to see, well, what's your process or what, you know, your track record or whatever. Fidelity and nobody else can know the future. And so they can't know how these wealth management firms will do for you in the future. And depending on the type of goals you have, one of the things I'd be concerned, the fees are probably a little high for the dollar amounts that you're talking about. They're not outrageous, but they're a little high in my opinion. But what I'm more concerned about is that if you're investing it conservatively, you're probably not going to make a huge rate of return, and then those fees are going to end up eating up that rate of return. Now, if you're still getting a level of service from those wealth management firms, John, that you think is suitable for those costs, I'd keep it. But it's the same way of, you know, when I go to a restaurant, sometimes I get this really great meal that involves ingredients that I don't even know where to get them, much less how to prepare them. And I pay $24 for it, and I don't have to cook, and I don't have to clean. I'm very well satisfied. Other times I get, you know, a steak that cost me $34, and I say, gee, I not only could have bought this steak for $5, but the way that I make it is actually better than the way that they made it. And so it's really a matter of you feeling like what you're getting from it is worth the money that you're paying for it. And as many people entering retirement rightfully fear, we've reached our maximum financial capacity once we get into our mid-50s in terms of how much we can understand and appreciate about this stuff. And so some people really enjoy it. They're really good at it. They take a lot of satisfaction out of managing their own money. Other people say, this isn't something I want to deal with. It causes me stress. And for 0.5% to 1.5%, it's worth it to hand it over to somebody else. And those people are usually both right.
Good answer, Kevin.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, John, and good luck to you. Kay in Plainfield is with us. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Hi, Joy. How you doing?
I'm good. What's your question, Kay?
Hi. Good morning, Kelvin.
Hello.
Yes, I was trying to find out if you have an unpaid bill and you receive these letters that they send you from a collection agent or a collection company, and they give you this offer to, like, maybe settle it. Is it advisable to go ahead and take the offer they're giving you, or just go ahead and pay the full amount that you owe?
Well, that's actually a very good question. The settlement offer is better as long as you can get the debt canceled out for that. In some cases, it's not common, but it has happened in the past where there's some confusion as to who is the rightful recipient of that money. And if it can be proven to you that the people receiving the money actually have your account, it's very common for credit card companies to sell accounts that they can't collect on for pennies on the dollar owed to collections agencies. That's what happens usually when most people can't get it. So if you can guarantee and verify that the people receiving your pennies on the dollar for payment of the account or partial payments are going to satisfy the judgment, I would actually go ahead and do that, because at this point, even if you sent the full amount into the credit card company, you can contact the company and ask them what your options are to do that. But I'm guessing they don't even have your account on file. They couldn't even take it if they wanted to. But contact them first. find out the status of your account and make sure to see what they say about it. And then if they can say, yes, this is who has your account now, then yes, you're going to have to pay it sooner or later. You're going to get a judgment against you. And when that does happen, that's very difficult to get out from under. It can cost you a lot more money down the road, Kay, than just paying off the credit card bill.
Thanks for calling, Kay. Good luck. Connie in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I'm calling for my son. He's 35, just starting a family, so there's three people, husband, wife, and child, and wondering, is it better for him to get term insurance or a whole life or a combination? He has no life insurance of any kind at this point.
Right. And I'm guessing he just at this situation in his life, he doesn't just have tons and tons of money lying around either, right?
No.
Okay. That's normal. And if that's the case, he's much better off getting just term life insurance. And the reason being is it's generally much, much less expensive than cash value or whole life or universal insurance. And with three kids, or with three members of the family with mouths to feed, he needs a lot in there. They need about 200 times their monthly expenses, at least, in death benefit of the life insurance. So make sure he gets a lot of it and make sure it lasts at least 25 years past the birth date of the youngest child. So if he has a three-year-old, let's say, he should get a term policy that lasts at least 22 years and probably err on the side of caution to 25. And Connie, the best place he can go to examine policies and check out what it would actually cost and look at different companies is termforsale.com, T-E-R-M, the number four, and then sale.com, termforsale.com. And he can put his information in without having to be, you know, solicited by an agent. But we'll put the link up to that website at onyourmoney.com as well.
Okay. Now, as he gets older towards retirement, then do you recommend getting any whole life at all?
Usually not. We're in a very low interest rate and low return environment right now, and typically any investments within that policy, which is what a lot of these cash value policies provide, the returns are going to be eaten up by the fees and expenses and the sales commission. So there are some times where I'd still recommend people purchase cash value life insurance. This is definitely not one of them.
Thanks, Connie, for the call. Sarah in Viroqua is with us now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just had some comments back when you were talking about the bug biting issues. And what we have found to be very, very successful for the biting gnat is Absorbing Junior or Vanilla Extract. Either one of those work absolutely awesome. And for the mosquitoes, we use Avon products such as Skin So Soft. That whole line.
No, that's to prevent the bite itself,
mm-hmm.
Sarah?
Yep, it's to keep them from biting you.
I've heard about the Avon
one. I thought the Absorbing Junior was maybe one of the kids' names. Like, that the dad's name is Absorbing, kid's name. No. Absorbing Junior actually has the roll-on ball, doesn't it? You can apply it much easier.
It's actually a sponge, yeah. And it goes on really easy, mm-hmm. and the scent will fade away very quickly, so you don't walk around smelling funny. That's a big thing for my kids.
Well, then you got a little vanilla there. That smells nice. But instead of the deep products, I take it. Some people are a little sensitive to that. Sarah, thanks for the home remedies for preventing the mosquito or gnat bites. We should have a whole show on that, maybe. Anyway, what's the website of the week, Kevin?
Electricity-usage.com. They have a great calculator, and you can put in any specific device and put the name in, and it will tell you exactly how much electricity that you're using up and what it's costing you on a per-month basis. And I guarantee there's at least one person in most households who enjoys telling people how much electricity and money they're wasting by leaving a certain device on or plugged in. So what you find is that the coffee maker is no big deal. That's about $1 a month. But that TV and computer monitor are costing you maybe more per year in electricity than you paid when you bought the thing in the first place. Electricity-usage.com. And we'll have that up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
Sounds good. Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He'll be back next week with another edition of On Your Money. This time it will be an all questions answered edition. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.